Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
What the hell happened to work during the pandemic? A report from Mother Jones. More reaction to last week's Supreme Court ruling on the vaccine and the emergency temporary standard. Today on the show, the latest from the Ohio Federation of Teachers and an AFGE woman on the move in Georgia. Welcome to the Tuesday, January 18th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Melissa Cropper, longtime supporter of America's Workforce. She's president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, which is part of the American Federation of Teachers. And that's what we're going to start off with. The American Federation of Teachers recently launched a multi-year literacy campaign. Campaign is called Reading Opens the World, and it's designed to support students, along with educators and families, and foster an ongoing love of reading. Why? Because reading is foundational to everything we do. You got to read. And keep reading. So, OFT members in Ontario local schools, this is in Richland County, which is about, I want to say, maybe 80 miles south of Cleveland, Ohio. They hosted an event in connection with Reading Opens the World. And at the event, they gave out tips for parents and students about making reading a habit. Now, I want to play for you a little clip, and the OFT tweeted this out, and it's all about what they're doing in Richland County. Let's listen here on America's Workforce.
Reading is the most important skill that helps all other subjects.
First, you learn to read, and then you read to learn.
Is that the one you want, honey? Yeah. Okay, then meet me over here.
With today being Reading Opens the World at Stengel Elementary, it's been wonderful because our kids went down and got books, and they were ecstatic. They were so excited they came back, they sat and read them, and they love to read.
What book did you get? Let's see.
Targumentia.
Oh, nice. Have you ever heard of that book before?
No.
We
had comics, and you took a comic.
This year we decided to work with AFT to bring Reading Opens the World to Stengel, so we could give out some literature about the importance of reading at home and hopefully make that something that all families do in the new year, and to be able to allow the kids then to pick out a book of their choosing to take home and be excited about and read with their parents.
I think parents do appreciate getting some information that they can look over and they can help us and support their child at home, because not everybody knows how to help their kid with reading. And the more we read, the more places we can go, the more things we learn. It just opens a lot of opportunities for everyone.
Along with the free books that the children got today, we also did some bookmarks for them, and it talks about creating a strong reader, just different tips for the parents and different things. And there's also a website that they can go to if they need any extra help at home to work on that home-to-school connection with the parents. We did Coffee at the Curb today for our parents that drop off their kids, and it was really nice because we got to just real quick give them a cup of coffee and gave them some information, just basically to thank them for everything that they're doing to support their children at home, and we really appreciate all the hard work at home. It was a little chilly, though.
It was very cold. It was nice to see them roll the window down and say, oh, thank you, what a nice surprise. If you can make reading important in the home, you can see that it's important at school. It just broadens a child's brain.
We try as much as we can to get our parents involved, and so this is just one small way to show our parents that everything they do at home is so important and really just piggybacks on everything that we do here.
I really love the home classroom connection with the kids and the parents. We are trying to show them how important it is to have books at home. We need books in all kids' hands at all times, from the time that they are young to all the way through college. It's nice that our union is supporting the literacy and getting all the books out to the kids, and it's been wonderful to be able to send these books home with the kids and have the support from them and also from the community as well.
It's good that the union does things like this, because then parents can see how, oh, they're on the same page about how they really want reading to be foundational and part of the school process.
As a local union leader, it is really important to be able to engage the community and use the resources through our union, OFT and AFT. And this is one way that's been really helpful.
All of the school and all of the parents working together just is a wonderful thing to see.
Reading opens the world!
Once again, that's a clip out of Ontario local schools in Richland County, Ohio. And Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation, will get into some detail on that. We're also going to talk about another charter school organizing win. The educators at Summit Academy Secondary, Lorraine, officially won their election, and they are the 8th Union Charter School and the 3rd Summit Academy school to join a union. And she's going to talk about how that happened and, of course, the anti-union campaign that was thrown at the educators. And lastly, teachers fighting for safe conditions to keep schools open. We all know that students do best when schools are in person, and that's why the union has consistently fought for the precautions that can reduce COVID outbreaks and keep students, as well as teachers and staff, healthy in school. And that includes safe distancing, mask mandates, proper ventilation. And hopefully you get schools that have all those safeguards in place, you're going to have a safer environment. We'll touch on that. We're going to get into more detail on that, too. We have a segment with The Nation magazine this Thursday from an elementary school teacher in Brooklyn, New York, who's very, very outspoken on the conditions in many schools, especially hers in Brooklyn, New York. Second guest is Soretta Smith, and she comes to us from the American Federation of Government Employees. And that would be Local 2017. That's in District 5, which is just outside Atlanta. Soretta's been on the show before. She's a proud Army vet, a mother, a wife, small business owner, faith leader in her community. And she spent decades serving her country in various roles. She served as a medic in the Army for nearly a decade. Helped wounded soldiers recover in hospitals, clinics, worked in a field unit in Germany. Then she continued to serve by working for the federal government for another 24 years. And throughout her work, she became a union activist, serving as the Women's and Fair Practices Coordinator, Chief Steward, Legislative Political Coordinator, Local President, and also Georgia State Council President for the largest federal government union. That would be the American Federation of Government Employees. And she recently received an award, a labor award. And she's been a fighter for labor rights and civil rights. I'm sure she was very involved yesterday in the Georgia area, because yesterday was Martin Luther King Day. We'll touch on that. And also minimum wage. Apparently, the Atlanta area is raising wages to $15 an hour. And that's something we're seeing in various pockets of the country. So she's a fighter, and she's going to be our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, the Supreme Court, as you know, ruled last week to block the enforcement of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's employer vaccine or testing emergency rule. Got a comment here from Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and she said, "Well, we are disappointed by the decision. The court's majority clearly acknowledged OSHA's authority to protect workers who face heightened risks of contracting COVID-19 in the workplace. OSHA's responsibility to provide safe working conditions remains firmly in place. Now, while infections and hospitalizations surge, we again urged the Biden administration to require employers to provide protections beyond vaccines. And we will not beat this pandemic until we stop the spread of the virus at work." So there's other tools in the toolbox. We also have a comment here from Marty Walsh, the Secretary of Labor, on last week's Supreme Court decision. He said, I'm disappointed in the decision, which is a major setback to the health and safety of workers all across the country. OSHA stands by the vaccination and testing emergency temporary standard as the best way to protect the nation's workforce from a deadly virus that is infecting close to 800,000 Americans each day and has taken the lives of nearly a million Americans. A million. Can you believe that? Marty went on to say OSHA promulgated the ETS under clear authority established by Congress to protect workers facing grave danger in the workplace, and COVID is without doubt such a danger. The emergency temporary standard is based on science and data that show the effectiveness of vaccines against the spread of coronavirus and the grave danger faced by unvaccinated workers. These standards, common sense standards, he said, established in the ETS remain critical, especially during the current surge, where unvaccinated people are 15 to 20 times more likely to die from COVID-19 than vaccinated people. Walsh went on to say that OSHA will be evaluating all options to ensure workers are protected from this deadly virus. He went on to say, we urge all employers to require workers to get vaccinated or tested weekly to most effectively fight this deadly virus in the workplace. Employers are responsible for the safety of their workers on the job, and OSHA has comprehensive guidance to help them uphold their obligation. Let's hope they do so. In the meantime, National KOSH, which we have featured on the show many times. This is the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. They are not happy. We've got a comment here from Jessica Martinez, co-executive director. She said, at a time when the COVID-19 virus is spreading faster than ever, workers will pay the price with their very lives for this wrong-headed decision by the Supreme Court. A deeply flawed opinion ignores law and precedent that clearly states OSHA's authority to protect workers from dangerous conditions. She went on to say it's good to know that workers in federally funded healthcare facilities will still have protections from COVID-19, but we cannot leave other workers defenseless against a deadly virus. OSHA can and should still require employers to meet their legal and moral obligation to provide a workplace safe from known hazards. That's pretty much what Marty Walsh said. Hey, it's your responsibility. Do something. Protect your workers. In the meantime, nursing homes are suffering, and they're not happy about the healthcare part of that decision. The profession has lost more than 230,000 caregivers, which is 15% of the workforce. And they're figuring that anybody that's not vaccinated, that's now mandated in a federally funded official, is going to quit their jobs and make that even worse. We'll stay on that one. And finally, this is a good one. Mother Jones Magazine, in their January-February edition, which just came out, they asked the question, what the hell happened to work during the pandemic? And a lot of people are trying to figure that out because you're hearing about the great resignation. My gosh, for the last couple of months, we've seen 3 to 4 million people just pick up and leave their jobs. Well, Mother Jones took a look. One Instacart shopper reflects on how the company's opaque algorithm creates tremendous stress and financial uncertainty for workers. So they said, I'm leaving my job. Then there's a salesperson at Comcast explaining how the company's sales policies, get this, incentivize selling people internet packages they could not afford, but were desperate to get. Why? So their kids could attend remote school. That salesperson drove them to quit. A former Amazon staffer, this is all in Mother Jones, shares how he was forced to choose between unpaid family leave and quitting his job when his wife was dying from brain cancer, before being fired for poor performance weeks before she began hospice. An ICU nurse writes that she is looking forward to the day when she can just worry about her patients again, not her for-profit hospital's understaffing and inadequate training. That's a snapshot of workers who are saying, you know what, this job just ain't worth it anymore. You might want to check that out. Go to motherjones.com. What the hell happened to work during the pandemic? All right. We're going to take a quick break when we come back. Melissa Cropper on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars. That would be Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Website is oh.aft.org. And how many times did your parents tell you got to read? You got to read more. Got to go to the library, get some more books. Well, I'll tell you, the American Federation of Teachers launched a multi-year campaign, and Melissa's going to talk about it. Reading opens the world. Melissa Cropper, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Doing great. It's always great to be on the show.
This is great. We played the little clip here from Ontario local schools in Richland County. Apparently, they hosted an event. But I'd like to hear from your mouth what this is all about. This is pretty exciting. It's so important that young people read and read and read. There's so much that can open their eyes to. But talk to me about this campaign. Go ahead.
Well, I am really excited about this campaign because I am a school librarian myself. So I'm on leave from that job to serve in this position now, but that's my career. So reading has always been something that I see as highly important for our students. So this campaign from the American Federation of Teachers is one that we are enthusiastically pushing throughout all our locals. The idea is that we want to get the books into the hands, want to get 1 million books into the hands of children this year. So this is going on across all the country, but of course here in Ohio, we're really doubling down on this effort. And you saw the clip from Ontario, which is one of the first events we've done in Ohio, where they started the day by standing outside when it was about 15 degrees outside and meeting parents as they dropped off their kids and giving them coffee and some information about literacy and the importance of reading. And then each student in the school had the opportunity to choose a free book. We set up a little book fair and choose a free book to take home that day. And it was so much fun. I mean, it was just so much fun to talk with the kids about, you know, why did you choose this book, and see the excitement on their faces about getting to pick out a book and take it home. And contrary to popular opinion, you know, we think that kids don't read anymore. They just like to be on the screen. But mm-hmm. kids really do get excited about having their own book and be able to put their nameplate in, write their name on it, and take it home. And they still get excited about reading when we give them the opportunity to do it. So that's why we just are really pushing this campaign to help children build their own home libraries, really get a push behind that love for reading and get children on that pathway to starting this lifelong habit.
Melissa, I have to ask you, especially since you've been a librarian, has reading pretty much dropped off for the reason for this campaign, the fact that the AFT and the OFT is doing this kind of thing. I'm just wondering about that. Do you notice that happening, not just in Ohio, but around the country?
Right. I mean, there certainly is a competition with screen. But even with screen, you know, there's opportunities to read, obviously. But like I said, when you actually give kids an opportunity to look at books, they want to do it. So, yes, I've seen it. We've seen a drop-off, and that is part of this push that we just really want parents and students and everyone to understand how important reading is. But also, we really firmly believe that when you give kids the opportunity, they tend to like to do it. We just need to give an opportunity. But I will also add that, you know, one of my frustrations as a librarian over the course of the past decade or so is as we have put more and more of a push on test scores, we have kind of taken the joy out of reading and turned it more into an academic exercise. So again, this is why something like this campaign is so important, because it reinforces to students that, you know, there are books out there that align with your interest and you can read for fun. It's not just about reading for a test score. It's about really finding yourself in a book and creating that excitement about what you can experience from reading and taking away all the test scores and everything else from it.
Well, you nailed it when you said the joy of reading, because so many young people don't look at it that way. It's a task. Oh, no, I got to read this. Are you kidding me? But right. when you switch that dynamic around and make it look like it's fun, the joy of reading, it changes everything. That's great. Now, let me ask you about the money here. The money's coming from the union here. Are you bringing in maybe some corporate sponsors on this? What about that part?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because this is a really important partnership with an organization called First Book. And First Book offers high-end, high-quality, low-cost books to students throughout the country, focusing primarily on Title I schools. So those are schools with low-income students in them. And they have a lot of corporate and foundation sponsors that allow them to be able to do that. But this has been a long-time relationship between AFT and First Book to put books into the hands of students. So it is really, really a wonderful organization. I encourage people to look at First Book on the internet. I think it's just firstbook.org. And if you're able to make a contribution to them, that's a way that you can really help foster this love of reading and make sure that students have high quality, low cost books to read.
I got a couple of labor union books at home. You want me to donate them so kids would learn a little bit about organized
absolutely.
Labor?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's another one of my projects I need to talk to you about sometime.
I'm trying to help here, you know.
Thank you.
We don't see that taught in schools very much. I mean, it's important that they get the union perspective there. Oh, this is good. This is awesome. And again, this is a multi-year campaign. And I have to salute the American Federation of Teachers and, of course, Melissa Cropper, who is on the board there and president of the OFT on this. So this is one more question on this, too. Are they going to, monitor this for, results? You know how they gauge certain things, certain campaigns, to see what took place, say, maybe after the first year or second year? Is that part of the equation right now?
I'm sure that there will be a lot of tracking of where the books go and how the books are used, et cetera. So I know we will be watching here in Ohio. I mean, we're planning a few other events. I know that our Cleveland Teachers Union is working closely, actually, with the new mayor around a literacy campaign that may focus on this First Book event. We're planning at our convention in February to give out 40,000 books. So we will continue every month to have stories about what's happening here in Ohio around this campaign, and we will certainly be tracking where the books go and how the books are being used.
That's wonderful. All right, let's go on to charter school organizing, and apparently you got another win here.
Yay.
And this is us. Yes, Summit Academy. Yeah, you're on a roll here. What's the story here, Melissa?
Well, I think as people in charter schools see the success we've had in places and see what kind of contracts people are getting, they recognize that, you know, they can change their own working conditions. And I think this is what happened here at Summit in Lorain. We already represent two of the schools in the Summit chain. As you remember, you know, Summit and Parma is the one who went on strike a few years ago.
Right.
And so the teachers in Lorain just said, you know, we want to be part of this too. They're tired of their working conditions, tired of the low pay, and they recognize that being a part of a union is a way to correct some of those issues.
Melissa, I understand that there's another school involved here, Menlo Park Academy, and this is a charter school in Cleveland. They're waiting for a NLRB hearing before they receive a union election date. Can you give us some details? What's happening there?
There was a court decision when we were doing our first organizing in charter schools and actually first started in Chicago around should charter schools fall under NLRB or under CERB, and the court ruled that they fall under NLRB. So all our charter schools in Ohio, again, we now will represent eight, have all fallen under NLRB. But Menlo, as a delay tactic, has decided to challenge that. So we're still waiting a decision to see whether we have to file the election under NLRB or whether we will file it under CERB. But we will file. So
okay.
It's just a matter of time to find out under which jurisdiction we have to file.
And that should be coming up shortly then?
We hope. I mean, we've had the hearings. We're just waiting for the decision from the hearings. We try to work with the administration to say, hey, if you want us to file under CERB, will you give us voluntary recognition if that's what the holdup is? But, of course, that's not the holdup. This is simply a delay tactic to push this out as far as they possibly can.
And if you could elaborate on those delay tactics, because, you know, that's where the threats and the intimidation come in. Do you have any examples of that happened there?
Right. So, you know, they, it's just for things that have happened at Lorain at Menlo. But, for example, like at Lorain, there are a lot of threats about the damage of being part of a union, and that, you know, they did things like they offered all the other employees, any non-union employees that worked for Summit Academies, because it's a chain of like 24, got a Christmas bonus, didn't apply to people who are part of a union, which of course we filed on that. Mm-hmm. But again, that was a scare of the Lorain people that, you know, if you become part of a union, you'll be left out of other things that happen. They do things like, you know, hold meetings and try to tell you the dangers of being part of a union. And then, like we saw in our in previous campaigns, just anything they can do to slow down the election, so to put up challenges to who can be part of the bargaining unit and who cannot be part of the bargaining union. Do you file under NLB? Do you file under CERB? Just every play in the book that they can possibly come up with, they use to try to delay and to have conversations with the employees about why it's bad to become part of the union. I mean, in Lorain, they were sending them flyers that were just saying all kinds of outrageous things about the union, why it'd be bad to be part of the union. But again, what worked to our advantage is Lorain was able to see that we already represent Parma and Painesville, and able to see the good things that they've gotten in their contract. And they were already firmly sold when they came to us that they wanted to be part of this union, because they could see that it was going to work to their benefit and to the students' benefit to be part of us.
Yeah. When you have one or two wins and people are doing okay with the union, then that's a pretty good example there to show to the ones that are trying to organize. Yeah, it makes a whole lot of sense.
Summit had that threatened during the campaign that they would not get the same contract as the other two, schools are getting. Now, I hope that is not the case. It would be really a shameful waste of public dollars for them to hire lawyers to have a long, protracted contract negotiations when we've already got a contract with that chain with two other schools. They really should bring in Lorain under that same contract and save everybody, save the public a lot of money.
Sure. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, lastly, teachers who've been on the front lines for years now, and they're very outspoken, many of them are, on whether or not the school is actually safe for the students. And we had the shutdown last year due to the pandemic, and then there's some schools that are, there was a fight in Chicago over that just a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to spend some more time on this. I just want to call attention to The Nation magazine, and I know you, this is so funny too, because I was reading The Nation magazine last week, and I saw this article that came out of Brooklyn, New York, and it was about an elementary school teacher, activist teacher, who was just upset with the way teachers are being treated. So I sent it over to Melissa, and then she said, you know what, I was just reading it. I was going to send it to you. We were on the same page that day. But your perspective on this, and I can't wait to talk to her. That's going to be in a couple of days. But this is a battle that shouldn't even be going on. I don't get it. I mean, you want the kids to be safe. You want the teachers to be safe. But apparently, a lot of this has to do with the fact that we don't have any uniform standards to follow. Your comments on that?
Well, we don't have any uniform standards, and where we do have standards, there seems to be a reluctance to enforce those standards. You know, I had a call with our local presidents last week, and just heard over and over and over about how even when they, you know, they supposedly have a mask mandate, it's not being enforced for fear of whatever, fear of parents being upset or That this kind of concerns. As a matter of fact, I got a text from someone last week saying that they had a student in their classroom who had direct exposure to COVID, and the only way the student was supposed to be allowed to come back to school was if he wore a mask, and he refused to wear a mask and refused to go home, and the superintendent said he couldn't do anything about it, and they wanted to know if that's true. Since when is it true that a student ever gets to decide to not follow any rule? And that's the whole problem here, is we've set up these situations where you don't have to follow a rule, and now all of a sudden, all rules go out the window. So this is what we're seeing everywhere, is that there's no mask enforcement, there's no testing happening, and as a result, we have a lot of absences, both student and staffing. And when you have a lot of staff absences, it makes it really difficult to keep the school open, and particularly in a safe way, because now you're combining classes, getting, you know, 50 to 100 students in a cafeteria for one person to supervise, and that's not only a health problem, that's just a supervision problem also.
Right.
So, and I think what's frustrating to teachers is that the blame keeps being put on the teachers.
Yeah.
And the teachers have no control over these situations. It's not that teachers want schools to shut down. Teachers want to have their regular classrooms. They want to have their 20, 25 students in a classroom and teach them every day. But the circumstances are not allowing that to happen. I think, you know, we see in places where rules are put in place and where they're enforced, that they're not having these kind of issues. So, for example, in Beechwood, they have mask mandates. Staff has to either be required or tested to show that they're negative. They have testing available in the school for all students and all staff free of charge. Every student involved in extracurriculars has to be tested weekly. And as a result, they're not seeing these shortages of staff in the schools because people are, you know, people are staying healthy. They're they're not having to shut down their schools. They're not having the problems that other places are having. We're seeing the same thing in Cleveland now. They, you know, they shut down for a week in order to be able to figure out what their next steps are, and now they're having enforcement of masks in schools, and they're having enforcement of the safe physical distancing, and they're doing these kind of things that are allowing them to stay open face-to-face. So we have to put these protocols in place, but more importantly, once they're in place, they have to be enforced if people want students to be in school face-to-face.
Makes a whole lot of sense. Common sense solutions to a situation that is deadly in America when it comes to this pandemic. And I don't understand the confusion on this. I'm sure you don't either.
No.
But they're just not following the science, and that's a sad part of this. Like I indicated, we're gonna delve into this deeper on Thursday's show with a teacher in Brooklyn, New York, who has been very, very outspoken. And the teachers are the ones getting shamed in all this. They're trying to do the right thing for their kids, and they're being scapegoated, which is so sad, so sad. All right, Melissa, great job. As usual, oh.aft.org. You might want to go to that website and check out that video that we played earlier about what the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, is doing to promote reading in America. Great idea. Good stuff, and we'll continue to follow that. You take care, stay safe, and we'll talk next month, okay?
Thank you. You too.
All right, quick break. When we come back, Soretta Smith is with the American Federation of Government Employees. That would be Local 2017 outside Atlanta, Georgia. She just got a labor award, and she's going to talk about that and more right after this.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes La Una to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings, so keep them coming. Let's go to just outside Augusta, Georgia. I was aired in what I said earlier, Atlanta. She's outside Augusta, Grovetown, City Council member, Soretta Smith, longtime member of the American Federation of Government Employees, proud sponsor of the show, the National Union, and she's with Local 2017, and she's in District 5. Soretta Smith, welcome back to America's Workforce. How are we doing today?
I'm doing awesome. It's great to be back. How are you?
I'm doing well. We got a little snow up here. In fact, we got hit pretty hard. Yesterday, thankfully, I was off for MLK Day, and I had the opportunity to go through 21 inches of snow in my driveway. Now, I don't know. Crazy weather out there. What, did you get any of that down there? Because I know there are some parts of the country that got hit pretty good.
We did not. Now, in the Atlanta area, which is about 2.5 hours where my son is, they did. But we didn't get any snow, any ice, just some rain and some wind. So, yeah. It bypassed us.
Well, winter isn't over yet, so you might get some down the road. We should point out that Soretta is, and I hope I get this correct here, National Fair Practices Affirmative Action Director for District 5. Boy, that's a mouthful. Did I get that correct?
National Fair Practices Affirmative Action Coordinator for District 5. That's it. Yes, I am.
Coordinator. How long have you had that position?
I have been in this position almost 2 years. Two years.
And how many years in the union for you?
Wow, I've been in the union about 15 years.
And you served as a medic in the Army for nearly a decade. Thank you for your service there. You helped wounded soldiers in hospitals, clinics, field unit in Germany. You've done a lot. You've been all over the world. And I know you're very, very proud to be a union member, especially with the American Federation of Government Employees. All right, talk to me about this labor award. I got a text from Soretta yesterday, and she's showing me this labor award. Talk to me about that, Soretta. That's quite an honor.
It really was. I was surprised. Just what an honor. There's an organization called Sisters United Organization. It's an organization comprised of women veterans. And they hosted this event, and I was selected to receive the Community Labor Leader Activist Award. And it really meant a lot to me. Number one, because I am a veteran. So coming from a women's veterans organization, that meant a lot. But just being recognized in the community, because you don't do this work because you're looking for accolades or, you do the work because you have a passion and a heart and a desire to be a voice for people, to speak up for people, but to be recognized by my community that, they see the hard work and just for them to say thank you for the work, that really, really meant a lot to me.
I think that's quite an honor, and I think the timing could not be better. Yesterday being Martin Luther King Day, and we heard so many times, and I've said this on the show, labor rights and civil rights, labor rights and civil rights. And you know, being the fact that you're in Georgia, not far from where King was preaching back in the 60s, this has to make you feel really, really good. Speaking of that, were you involved in any activities yesterday for MLK Day?
So we had a community event here at one of the larger churches here, Broadway Baptist Church. We had a community event, and it was just an awesome event. Of course, you know, we had a lot of our federal and state leaders that came out. Community leaders came out. One of the mayors was a keynote speaker. And, you know, it was just one thing that I have to lift that he said that it still stuck with me. I'm still thinking about it this morning as he was talking to elected officials and, you know, people in the political arena. He said that you can't celebrate the man and dismiss his mission. And that really stuck with me because, you know, on MLK Day, so many people come out and they tweet and they post pictures. But when it's time to vote legislation, like our voters' rights, you know, the John Lewis Voters' Rights Act and other legislation, we don't see people support in legislation what they come out and say on MLK Day. So it was a very powerful, thought-provoking ceremony yesterday.
Soretta, as I recall, the last time we had you on the show, you just became a member of the Grovetown City Council outside of Augusta, Georgia. And I think it's only fitting because Martin Luther King said, you know, young people have to get involved. All people have to get involved and look for careers that are going to help change the dynamics in this country. So I have to salute you. And labor's been doing this. Labor's been encouraging this. The AFL-CIO even has a toolkit. If you're a member of a union, especially if you're an officer, obviously you've got some rank, maybe you should think about getting involved in politics so you can change the system from within. Is that or was that your mindset when you decided to run for council down there?
Absolutely. I was totally and completely motivated and inspired by my work with my union. I say it often when I speak, you know, it's because of labor that I even pursued running for any type of office, because I truly believe that we need more people from labor running. We need more people from labor at the seat where decisions are being made. Working people understand the needs of working people. Labor understands the needs of working people, and they need to be in those conversations. And so absolutely, labor is the reason why I ran. And I've been doing lots of workshops and speaking to help encourage other folks from labor to run for office as well.
And how long have you been a member of the city council?
10 months.
Is there anything you could wrap around to say, hey, I, Soretta Smith, am responsible for this legislation that changed the lives of some people? Or is it kind of premature right now?
Well, no, I am very proud of the fact that when I came on board, you know, one of the first things that people started talking to me about was, we know you're with labor. You know, we know that, you know, you guys have been instrumental in some cities in Georgia with raising the minimum wage for city workers to $15. And I was all for it. I kept telling people, you know, you have my support here on the council. I'm going to be pushing for it. I'm going to be talking to the other council members about it. It's really important. And so in the summer of this year, we actually passed, and all of the city workers here in our city now make $15. And we're one of few cities here in the Central Savannah region that have a $15 minimum wage for our city workers, and that I am extremely proud of.
You should be very proud of it. You know what? I want to talk more about that story. I know this was not an easy task to do. If you can stay with us for another segment, Soretta Smith joining us on our live line from Grovetown, Georgia, just outside Augusta, Georgia. And she's a member of the American Federation of Government Employees Local 2017. That would be District 5. We'll continue the conversation right after this.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle. Let's go back to Grovetown, Georgia, just outside Augusta, Georgia, where they do the Masters each and every year. Soretta Smith joining us on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees, District 5. She is the National Fair Practices Affirmative Action Coordinator. I got it right this time, didn't I? Okay.
You got it right this time.
All right. We left off talking about raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And there's very good reason for this. When it comes to the federal government, they haven't done anything since 2009. Hard to believe the minimum wage, the federal minimum wage in the country today is $7.25 an hour. Many states, municipalities have raise their wages up. And in your case, at Grovetown, $15. Soretta, talk to me about that. I'm sure that didn't come easy. If you can tell us about the pushback, and maybe those listening to us, we're nationally podcast here, they would probably get some clues on how they can do that in their respective community.
Well, you know, it was very, very, I was very, very surprised. People were very open. They knew my background coming in, and so I think they just needed someone to come in and say, hey, this is what labor's been able to do. You know, I contacted the AFL-CIO and said, hey, can you send me some language from some other municipalities that you've worked with where they've increased the minimum wage to $15? So there really was not a lot of pushback. I think the timing was just right. There were, you know, Amazon is building around this area. And so I think people are beginning to realize and understand that with companies like Amazon and different companies that are coming in, if we're going to be competitive, if we're going to keep folks, you know, we have to pay people. And so they just needed the voice and the someone to come in and say, hey, look, we've done it here. We've done it there. It works. And, of course, the employees were just, you know, they were excited because they loved working here in the city. They didn't want to leave and go look for other places to work. But, you know, it's very hard to live off of that minimum wage. People having to work two and three jobs just for the basics and the necessities. So I think, you know, just coming together, presenting the facts, presenting the data, showing some studies from other cities. Those are some of the things that we did to show that it was time to do it. And it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, the timing couldn't be better because, as you know, Soretta, with this pandemic, there's an employee shortage in America. A lot of workers are saying, you know what, I'm not going to work for these low wages anymore or lousy benefits. So they're raising those wages on their own when it comes to that kind of thing because employers have to react to the environment out there. So again, I salute you for working it at the right time in the right place. No doubt about that. Now, if we can only carry that over to voting rights, as you indicated in the first segment, there's two pieces of legislation, the Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Act. But we're having some problems. And you're in Georgia, which is a state, one of many, I think 19, where they passed voter suppression laws. What's wrong with this right now? Why can't we get people on board in the Democratic Party to move forward on this? I don't get that part. Can you give me an answer to that?
You know what? I've been kind of asking myself the same question. I'm at a loss for words, really, because even as the keynote speaker was talking about this yesterday, we have the ability, first of all, it shouldn't be something that has to be renewed every 25 years. We have the ability to put something in place for eternity, you know, that's long life, that's lifelong, rather. And I'm not, you know, I think sometimes we like to play nice, and there comes a time where you can't play nice, especially when something like people's right to vote or they're being disenfranchised and infringed upon to give one party this political advantage and political power who do not have the best intentions for the country. And so, again, you can't support and celebrate someone like Martin Luther King Jr. and then when it comes time to vote for legislation that champions his life and what he stood for, voting rights, living wages, you vote against it because you want to stay in power and have an advantage over people. I think we've just lost touch with, like, we are all humanity. We're humans. We kind of just lost touch with that, I think, with this whole thing of us versus them, you know, we're better, we're more powerful. We kind of lost touch of that. At the end of the day, I bleed the same blood that you bleed. I have children just like you have children. I have parents. I care about health care for my family. They have the right to health care just like you have the right to health care, whether you're rich or poor. It doesn't matter. These are basic human rights that we have, and I think we've lost sight of that. I really do.
Do you think if nothing is done, and it seems to be going in that direction, things are going to get worse? Are you worried about democracy in this country if we don't get these key bills passed in the Senate and in the House?
Say I'm worried because it's one thing that we showed everybody here, that Georgia showed the country. We're resilient, and we will do what is necessary to put two U.S. senators in office. We will do what is necessary to get Stacey Abrams in that gubernatorial seat in 2022. We're going to do what's necessary, regardless of what laws they enact and what types of hoops and hurdles they put in our way. I believe that not just Georgia, but I believe that this country is going to stand up and do what's necessary and do what's right to fight for democracy. It may be a little harder. It may require a little more time and energy, but I believe in America and I believe in the American dream. And I believe that America is going to stand in the face of this evil. And we're going to show it that we are America and we will not be denied our democracy.
Amen, sister. Love your attitude, Soretta.
I'm ready. I cannot wait to start canvassing and phone banking and lint dropping. I am ready to get on. I'm ready, okay? I'm ready.
Okay, we're going to check in with you down the road. And also, I don't know, do you know Stacey Abrams pretty well? Is there a chance I could get her on this show?
Hey, you know, we'll see. I'll call the national president, and we'll see. We'll see if
okay.
We can make that happen.
Okay, sounds good. So, right, I'm out of time. Thank you so much for what you're doing down there. Keep up the fight, and we'll stay in touch, okay?
Thank you for having me. It's always great to be here with you. Take care.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, more on the American Federation of Government Employees and also the roofers and waterproofers will be joining us. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.